Welcome to the Spartan Underground Show, your ultimate resource for everything Spartan race training. Discover what the best SGX coaches are doing to help their clients boost performance, dominate obstacles, and get through each race burpee free. Here is your host, Mike Diebler.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Spartan Underground Show. This is your host, SGX coach Mike Diebler. Thanks for joining us today on episode 5. We have some great content for you today, helping you train smarter for your next Spartan race. If you have any questions or comments, or just feel free to contact us at info@spartanunderground.com. And we would love it if you gave us a review on iTunes or wherever you might be listening to this podcast. This is a free service that we're doing, and we just want to make sure we're doing a good job and keep it going. So please give us a positive review there. In this week's episode, we are going to get into a great new research study that came out on altitude training, and or really altitude mask training. And we're going to talk about the study and how it might apply to you. And our research of the week will have to do with altitude masks for you. And then we're going to get into our interview with SGX coach Dominic Frazier. This is an awesome interview. Coach Dominic is such a passionate guy. We're going to get into a little bit about his story. He's overcome some pretty big obstacles in his life that he can learn from and pass on to others. We talked about some unconventional training methods that he uses, and then his different training philosophies. And I know there's some great things in there that are going to give you some insight onto how he trains that you can take and apply directly to your training. And he actually gives quite a few sample workouts that you can kind of play around with and see how it works for you. All right, so this week's research review is hot off the presses. This was in the Idea Fitness Journal, September 2016, so brand new. It was an ACE-sponsored study that looked at elevation masks, which you've probably seen people at the gym wearing these. Maybe you've messed around with them yourself. But the idea is trying to almost simulate altitude training, even when you're not at altitude. So what this study did was they took 24 moderately trained volunteers, and they had a control group and then a group that wore the mask. They put them through a progressive training program for 6 weeks, and then they measured the improvements that they saw. To kind of summarize the study, bottom line, these masks don't really stimulate or mimic the effects of altitude training. You're just not going to get the same hormonal production and red blood cell and hemoglobin increases. There was no change in VO2 max and necessarily lung function, but they did see some improvements in performance, which is still beneficial. So often they don't live up to the hype that they claim, making actual physiological changes, but there may still be some benefit to training with these masks. For example, the main finding that they had in this study was there was an improvement in respiratory compensation threshold. Think of this essentially as you getting winded. So they found there was a higher, an increase in this threshold, and there was a higher power output at their threshold. So essentially the participants training in the masks could train at higher intensities and go harder before they would get winded. So there actually is going to be some benefit with this. I mean, just imagine if you're going out on a run or doing a workout and it takes longer for you to get winded and out of breath. That's a big advantage to have. So they did find that improvement there. I wanted to bring up one more study. This one's a little bit older, but kind of along the same topic. This was from Medicine and Science in Sport and Exercise from 2001. And this study looked at inspiratory muscle training. So we often think of resistance training, you know, for our arms, legs, shoulders, whatever. So these big muscles, but we don't often think about the muscles that help with breathing. It was kind of once thought that these muscles never really fatigue. They were designed for endurance, and if you were going to be limited in your training performance, it wasn't going to be because of these muscles. And they're starting to realize that that's not necessarily true, and there's a certain instances where they do limit performance, in particular when you're training for high intensities or going longer duration exercise bouts, that will become a limiting factor. So it doesn't hurt to train some of these muscles. So what this study does was they actually added resistance to inspiratory muscles, so when you breathe in. And they used basically a resisted breathing device. They did this on competitive rowers, and they had them do, again, they broke them up into a control group that just did their normal rowing routine, and then they had the experimental group that practiced this breathing, where they did 30 resisted inspirations each day. And they did this over 11 weeks, and what they found was pretty unbelievable. By just adding this breathing training, they found that their 6-minute all-out max effort row increased by 3.5% versus 1.6 in the control group. So 1.6% increase with just typical rowing exercises and other conditioning drills. Now, I know 3.5 and 1.6 might not sound huge, but when you are already an elite athlete, you want every advantage possible. So that was actually shown to be a significant improvement. And they also found that their 5-kilometer time decreased by 36 seconds compared to 11 seconds with the control group. So again, saving over 20 seconds in their 5-kilometer time. So all they did was add breathing training. So what the main point with these two research studies are is that breath is obviously critical, and you should be incorporating something to train. Now, this could be using something like an altitude mask, or this could be just simple breathing exercises, diaphragmatic breathing drills, or anything to just keep your breathing under control. And even better if you can do it when you're being stressed. So many people, when they start exercising, which is a form of stress, they may panic a little bit. And then when their breathing gets uncontrollable, obviously performance is going to be affected there. So that's our research review. So if you've never tried a training mask, maybe something worth looking into, or again, you can find tons of different diaphragmatic breathing exercises, and I'll link a few in the show notes just to give you some ideas there. So it seems only fitting to make our resource of the week altitude training masks. So the one I use is actually called REBNA, that's R-E-B-N-A, and that stands for Regain Breath Natural Ability, and it's actually a Japanese training mask. Kind of hard to find. I was given it as a gift, actually, which was pretty cool, and finding it online is a little bit tricky. I'll put some links. Unfortunately, they are Japanese websites that you can go through. Don't know how it all works, because the pricing is not in US dollars, but if you at least want to check it out and see what I'm talking about. But I'll also put some links in for some other products that are out there that have gotten good reviews and seem to work well. I just wanted to explain why I like the REBNA one so much. So obviously you can control the resistance there, and they have different levels to, you know, supposedly simulate higher altitude levels, but really it's just resistant breathing, which we talked about in that inspiratory muscle training study. So it makes it a little bit harder to get air in, so those breathing muscles have to work a little bit harder. So you can control that. They have little discs that you can exchange for easier or harder levels. And the cool thing is that inside the mask, there's this lip that makes it so you kind of have to breathe really more naturally, and that's breathing in through your nose and then out through your mouth. So what that lip does is actually prevent you from breathing in through your mouth. If you try and inhale through your mouth, the mask kind of, it's like a suction cup, and it's going to get pulled in towards your face, making it very difficult and uncomfortable. And if you're trying to breathe out through your nose, it kind of hits that lip and blows the air straight up into your eyes, which is uncomfortable. So you have to get used to deep breaths in through your nose and then exhaling through your mouth. I've played around with this for a long time, so this is just off my personal experience. It's worked really well. If nothing else, it's gotten me to think about my breathing, so I can go out on a run or do a weight training session, whatever it might be, with the mask on. So now I'm not just concerned with my running form or my distance or my intensity. I have to think about my breath now. So now I work on my cadence, you know, breathing in every few steps and then breathing out. So again, just to reiterate, using these training masks are not going to really simulate altitude training. It's not going to change anything with your blood or your VO2 max or hormone levels, anything like that, but it may be something to help give you a competitive edge. And if nothing else, it's just helping you practice better breathing habits and, you know, breathing through your nose and mouth properly and not just going right to that heavy chest emergency type breathing. If you've ever seen anything Joe DI's post on the Spartan website or his Instagram or anything like that, you'll see he'll do some training where he'll actually go on a run with a mouth full of water. So kind of just seeing how far he can go with that water in his mouth, only breathing through his nose, and, you know, again, staying calm and under control of your breath while stressing your body. So it's just cool practices. So again, I'm going to put some links in so you can check out these different types of training masks. And, you know, they're not super expensive investments, but it might be something that's worthwhile for you. So get on there. Again, it's SpartanUnderground.com/episode-5, and you can check all those out. All right, we have reached today's SGX Coaches interview, and I know you guys are going to love this one today. We have SGX Coach Dominic Frazier. Coach Dom has been in the fitness industry for over 10 years, has a BS in exercise science. His list of certifications goes on and on. I'll have his bio so you can read up on him if you're interested, but we might be here all day if I list them on. But on top of being SGX coach, he's precision nutrition level 1. He's a training for warriors level 2 coach. He's an NFL combine coach, worked with a lot of elite athletes and the average person, you know, just training to get healthier and to run a Spartan race. he is the CEO of Frazier Fitness Human Performance and Sports Nutrition Consulting. And we get into a couple great topics with Coach Frazier, and we're going to talk a little bit about his story. He was diagnosed with epilepsy as a teenager, and kind of him dealing with that and overcoming it and how it's just made him stronger and the lessons that he's learned there. And we're going to get into some of his favorite training methods and how to turn you into an athlete, because if you're training for a Spartan race, you need to be athletic. It's one of the pillars of Spartan race training. So enjoy today's interview. All right, what's up, everybody? I am here with Coach Dominic Frazier. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
Doing awesome. Really excited for this interview. I know we're going to talk about some fun stuff and leave our listeners with some great stuff to start to implement into their training. So let's jump right in. And just in case our listeners haven't heard of you before, can you just give us a little bit of background about yourself, how you got into training, and then kind of what led you to Spartan race training?
All right. Like you said, my name is Dominic Frazier. I have a degree in exercise science. I actually was a two-sport athlete in college, playing football and running track. I went for athletic training, and I actually switched majors senior year. I had enough time and just transferred into human performance because I always loved, you know, working out and being an athlete, and that really led me down, you know, that path. I mean, I thought I was going to get into physical therapy. There was a two-year waiting list, so I just started training people, and that's really, you know, how it got going, from personal training to training, you know, high-end youth performance tennis conditioning, as well as training the Milwaukee Wave professional soccer team back home. That's really how I got started. Boot camps, things like that, your general beginning fitness stuff, way back at the Kenosha YMCA and Kenosha Athletic Center. And then I just kept it going from there.
Awesome. So I definitely want to get into training athletes and kind of talking more about that. But first, obviously Spartan race training is all about overcoming obstacles, and I know you've come over a pretty big obstacle. So just want to tell your story a little bit about your obstacle and how you got past it and how it's, you know, part of your life.
My biggest obstacle, I guess most people look at it as an obstacle. I look at it kind of like a superhero power that I have. at the age of 17, I had my first seizure after playing a video game. I still remember, this is the only seizure that I remember perfectly and clearly. I had just got done playing some Madden downstairs in my room at my old house, walked upstairs to actually go change my clothes into the bathroom, which now that I look back on it is quite odd because I had my own room. Why would I need to go change my clothes in the bathroom? I then walked back to my twin sister's room, looked at the TV, and I told her, holy crap, the people on the TV are coming out at me. Next thing I knew, I was falling over, and then she pushed me out of the way. After that, I don't remember anything except for waking up inside of an ambulance and trying to fight paramedics.
Wow.
So even with that, they never found out why I had the seizure. A lot of people will say it was due to the lights of the video game, but I was never diagnosed with that being the actual cause. And yeah, that is how it all started. I had my first one then. I had my second one, actually, that would have been my freshman year of college, in my dorm room. Luckily, one of my roommates was there to go get another teammate and help me. And then my third one was actually in the back of the car on the way from picking up my twin sister from Michigan State. So once you have more than one seizure, you're considered, you know, to have a seizure disorder or epileptic. The oddest thing about me is most people that have grand mal seizures, they're now called tonic-clonic. Those are the worst ones where you see people shaking all on TV and vomiting, things like that. Most people have 10 a day, 20 a day. Some kids even have up to 100. I never had any seizures during my playing seasons. So all during the 4 months of football, training camp, all of that, I never had a seizure. And all of my seizures, I've only had them at nighttime. And I've always been asleep. So that has always been amusing to the neurologists and the doctors and the things like that. They credit it, you know, to me being a trainer and to me being in such great health, as they like to say. One of the scariest moments was I was actually teaching a boot camp back home in Wisconsin, and we were running up the bluff, which has lots of stairs going down by the lake, and I just thought it was super, super bright out. I was actually in a prolonged state of a seizure for the past 5 days and didn't even know it.
Oh my God.
Because I was like, man, why the hell are all these women beating me up the stairs? So after that, I actually went and taught another class, and luckily one of my friends in the class was a nurse, and I remember vividly she was looking at me. She was like, yo, Dom, you good? And I'm like, yo, stand still, stop moving. I see like eight of you. She was like, yeah, I'm no dummy because I'm a nurse. I think you're having a seizure. I really wasn't having a seizure. What had happened was my medication didn't back up in my, or it backed up in my body. And I was actually what you would consider either A, high as a kite, or my body was toxic. So with that, I actually ended up in the hospital for, 5 days.
Wow.
Yeah, and I will tell you the worst part about that is, and you and I both know, being, you know, Spartan Race runners and trainers and things like that, we're very methodical with our eating regimen.
Yeah.
Do you know in the hospital they only give you 3 meals a day? I was highly upset about that. So I actually had my mom like bring me food and stuff. It was the craziest.
Wow.
But other than that, I mean, I'm one of those few people that's medicated. So I don't really have those issues. The hardest part is I still have to monitor my stress levels.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the most difficult. Most of the stuff I do, I guess technically I'm not supposed to. So like Olympic lifting can be considered too high of a stress on certain days. You know, pushing a sled can be considered too much of a stress. When I was coming up in college and going to clubs, the joke used to be like, yo, everybody check on Dom and make sure he don't look at the strobe lights. You know, so that used to be, you know, a running joke. And it used to, you know, at first it used to get to me because like all my teammates, you know, they just really cared about me. So they were always like checking on me like, yo, you good?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm great, I'm good. But it's just something that I've really learned to deal with. I'm still learning. I'm a very, very big advocate now for epilepsy awareness. It really doesn't get as much knowledge and, you know, outreach as it should. And a lot of people don't even know that it's slash number one, number two silent killer next to cancer.
Wow.
Because a lot of people, they look at it like you have to be diagnosed with epilepsy. Anybody can have a seizure. All it is a neurological dysfunction in your brain waves.
Hmm. Well, and hopefully this platform right here is just helping people learn and understand that, yeah, this is something that definitely can happen, and it's a serious thing that you just need to take care of.
Yeah, man, and I tell people, you know, don't let it stop you. People always look at me and like, oh, you're in great shape. Then I sit them down, and I have what I call the talk, and I tell them, look at me, and they're like, yeah, okay, you're in shape. I'm not you, and I'm like, do I look like I'm in shape? And they're like, yeah, and I'm like, well, here's a little bit about myself. Everything I do, technically, I'm not supposed to do. Then I tell them, hey, I was diagnosed with epilepsy at 17, and then it kind of clicks for most of them. It kind of clicks to them. They're like, wow, if he's doing, you know, things like this, then why can't I? Because I'm in the same medical condition as the people that have cancer and diabetes and osteoporosis and things like that. It's really all about your outlook on life.
Yeah. Yeah, and it sounds like this is something you've really embraced, and many people would use this as a crutch where it's like, well, you know, I can't really do that because I have this going on, and instead you're kind of using this to, no, I'm going to take care of myself better and use it, learn from it, and help teach others, which is awesome.
Right.
Cool. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I know a lot of people will get a lot out of that, and that's a great takeaway. Let's get into what brought you to getting certified as an SGX coach?
Well, I just thought it was, you know, the next coolest. I mean, honestly, I thought it was the next coolest thing out. I mean, I have a lot of certs, and I have a lot of certs that have lapsed, but I always look at it like once you have it, you have it. But I mean, I look at it like education is key. Both my parents are teachers. I was a teacher and things like that. So I always look at continuing education. You know, the more knowledge you have, the more you can educate the masses. So that's how I look at it. Plus, I always, from a business perspective, I'm like, you know, I don't want to lose too many clients. So if somebody comes to me with a want and a need, I want to be able to provide that service or cross-reference that service to the next best person. But then at the end of the day, I always look at it like, why not me? And I started running Spartan races in 2010 before there even was a cert, and I loved it. And I was like, I don't play ball anymore, none of that. This is my new high.
Mm-hmm.
So let me slowly get as good at it as I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can relate. I was a track athlete as well in college, and you know, it's not something that I was a high jumper. You don't just go play high jumping. You know, you can't really do it once your career is over. That's it. So it's, you know, and I found Spartan Racing. It's kind of that competitive edge came back, and you know, I wanted to race and train, and kind of got into it the same way. Let's go back. So your first race was in 2010. Do you remember that pretty vividly? Your first race.
Yeah, I mean, how that worked was I was actually a strength coach at FIU for 2 years, and I was a master trainer at 24 Hour Fitness. And I remember vividly one of the group X instructors was like, yo, there's this new race thingy, and I have two tickets that I'm not using. Does anybody want them? And me and my friend Gretchen, we were like the two, you know, coolest trainers, we thought. So we were like, yeah, we'll take them. When is it? And she was like, Saturday. Like, oh, well, all right. Can't be that hard. It's Thursday. So never had I heard of Spartan Race. So we looked it up. And this was back when Hobie Call was like just crushing the Spartan races. So we saw one of his workouts. And we thought we had enough time. So we saw one of his workouts of when he did the walking lunge for like a mile.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, that's the first shit we're going to do to train, even though we only had like 3 days. So me and Gretchen, we did that. We ran the race. And I've never ran competitively. places. Now remember, I'm from the Midwest. We don't have oceans, we have lakes. They didn't, and this was before they told you what was in the rakes. Now they tell you pretty much what you're going to get. They didn't say anything about swimming. Grabbed my shoulder, and I went underwater for a brief second. And you know how when your lips taste that salt water? If you haven't been in it in a while, you kind of panic. So I panicked, but after that, I made it through and finished that race. The most awesome part of that race was, you remember the old school Rubik's Cube?
Yeah.
That was in my first race. never in my life have I done the Rubik's Cube until the Spartan race. And I did it in like 10 seconds.
Wow.
And since then, I've never been able to do it again.
Wow.
I don't know how it happened, but it happened.
You're just in the zone.
I was in the zone, man. And then the most memorable thing about that race was me and Gretchen had already finished, and there was a group of ladies, and there was one heavier set lady that was having trouble getting over the last wall before the gladiators, back when they had the gladiators at the end. They went back and they helped her over, and then me and Gretchen, we also went back and we ran that last part of the race again with them.
Awesome.
That was when I saw that this was bigger than just a race. I really realized that there were a lot of people that just got up off the couch and did it. I know they had no clue what to expect, and I'm pretty sure many of those people never even looked on YouTube to even see what Spartan Race was. They just signed up and did it, and that right there, like, kind of like clicked like a switch in me, and I'm like, man, if you can get people to just do these or do any type of race, people can see that they have that power that they always thought they never had.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. You know? Yeah. So. Awesome. Yeah, I have not done a race with a Rubik's Cube, and I'm hoping that they don't bring that back because I might be there a while. do you remember how many burpees you had to do your first race, if any? Okay.
One, the vertical wall, that was kind of challenging because you're all wet before you do it. I didn't jump one of the climbing walls. I didn't jump over just because I didn't want to risk not landing properly.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just straight off of not being scared, but that was just straight off of safety. I knew I was in a fatigue state. And then the rope climb.
Okay.
So I'll tell you something truthfully. I still to this day can't climb the rope. So I always get burpees for the rope. And I've tried. I've had coaches come help me. I've had rope climbers come help me. I just can't climb it. Like, my mind and body, like, they just don't work together when it comes to the rope climb. But oddly enough, I can teach you how to climb the rope.
And that's what matters for everyone else, right? You'll just have to keep practicing. You'll get it.
Yeah, man.
Awesome. Well, cool. So let's get into your training style. A couple of things I wanted to bring up, because a lot of stuff that you'll post online on your Facebook page and Instagram is kind of this unconventional training style where you're not doing typical stuff like you think of when you think of working out, you know, barbells and dumbbells and kettlebells. You're using some unconventional things. So I just wanted to touch on that. Why unconventional, and what types of tools are you using there?
Well, when you ask that question, I would ask you, why not? And what is conventional training? I really got into different type of stuff. I'm a very, very big advocate for TRX and the TRX education system with the suspension training and the rip trainer. So that was my first breakdown to, I guess, what people would consider unconventional training. I'm actually a level 3 gray rank with them, so that's one of the top levels you can get. So I use that. I'm very big now into kettlebells, which I've always been into, and steel mace. And that was brought back into the realm from a company called Onnit. I'm not certified through them yet, but I have worked with some of the top coaches. I use that methodology, unconventional training and whatnot, and using, you know, sleds and things like the Viper and things. I I have a 3-year-old, I have a wife, you know, so I look at it like time is limited. And then I also put into perspective, a lot of my clients, their biggest thing is, I don't have a lot of time. What can I do in 20 minutes to an hour? And if I have limited equipment, what can I do? So I just started coming up with like little flows or complexes, you know, implementing the TRX or the kettlebell or body weight or, you know, using, you know, methodology like animal flow, which I'm certified in, and things like that. I got into that more because I feel people need to get more back to playing and body awareness. And those are some great tools that really hit your body from all angles. And to a lot of people, they look less intimidating than a barbell or dumbbells and things like that. I can get a woman to swing a kettlebell or squat with a, do a goblet squat with a kettlebell in a heartbeat before she puts a bar on her back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also certified in CrossFit, and I'm also a level 2 coach with Martin Rudy's Training for Warriors, where I get a lot of my methodology from. And it's just, I want to say it's more simplistic. I feel like these days, everybody's trying to reinvent the wheel when sometimes less is more. You know, a push is always going to be a push, a pull will always be a pull, a squat will always be a squat, and a hinge will always be a hinge. And those are your primary movement patterns, and crawling. Those are your primary movement patterns. Now we just fill in the gaps and put different tools in our hands or in different areas of our body to create load or, you know, submaximal or maximal tension. You know, if you have people that want to get stronger and they don't want to use weight necessarily, put them on a TRX.
Mm-hmm.
They're still using weight, using their own body, but they may not know that. So I always look at it like, you got to give clients all of what they want and all of what they need. It's just how do you put that into the program to also make sure at the end of the day, number one, they're still happy. Number two, they're still getting goals and results.
That's pretty much what it comes down to, right? That they're happy, they're having fun, and they're getting what they seeked when they came and hired you, basically.
Right.
Go ahead, sorry.
And I use a lot of the tools at the end of the day just because they're fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And like, you know, us as coaches, we can plan our day and plan our workouts all day long. 9 times out of 10, the time we schedule our workouts, something else happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I always look at it like, hey, if I can knock out 500 kettlebell swings today, that's perfect, because that's more work than the average person is going to do.
Yeah. Good point. I'm going to put some links in, because I know people probably have some questions on some of the things you brought up, like what animal flow is and training for warriors and things like that. But you mentioned the steel mace, and I know you posted some videos training with that, I think yesterday, maybe the day before. Can you...
Yesterday, me and my wife did a nice little 20-minute workout where I put her through the movements one by one, and then we turned it into a 10-minute flow.
Awesome. So just if you can, kind of describe what it is, because I know the steel mace sounds like a pretty intimidating piece of equipment, and like what unique things it can do versus other tools.
The steel mace is, I think if I'm correct, it's actually called a gada, which was like an ancient warrior tool that was kind of used to mimic training as far as mimicking a sword and things like that. There are maces and there are club bells, which you would have, you know, one in each hand. Some are made out of steel, and the ancient ones that are the original ones are actually made out of wood, and they can have all different type of designs and be different weights. I like the wood ones because you can get them, you know, very nicely made and customized and things like that, as well as the steel. But to some people, if you grab a piece of wood, that's a little less intimidating. But with the steel mace, it's all about rotation and anti-rotation.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do all your basic moves, your barbell curl and your, you know, your tricep press and your overhead press and your lunge and your squat. But then you can also put in moves like your steel mace 360, which is swinging it around your head, getting full, you know, maximal core tension throughout your body. And then you can take that 360 and then combine that with like a rotational lunge, a lateral lunge with a press, different movements like grave digger, or you can get into even warrior poses, like yoga poses.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm definitely going to post some videos too, because I know you've put a bunch on there of some of your workouts, just so people can see exactly what you're talking about, because sometimes it's hard to picture it. And people are probably still thinking of the name Mace and just not sure what they're getting into there.
Even with the club bells, like my wife, she calls them little maracas, because that's kind of what they look like.
Yeah. Awesome. So you just have to play the music and then get your workout in and dance or whatever with your Indian clubs. Nice. Let's get into a little bit with your program design. So you mentioned Training for Warriors. So I know that's a great program. Just kind of talk real briefly, like what a typical Training for Warrior workout would look like.
Training for Warriors was made by Martin Rooney, one of the very first UFC, I guess you would say, strength coaches. And he made it for MMA fighters initially, just to get them into conditioning and combat and things like that. And for those that do CrossFit, it would look almost identical, except there is no RX. The weight you use is the weight you use, and then we progress off of that. Animal Flow is also integrated into Training for Warriors. A typical workout, let's say you're brand new, and we're going to do a 1-minute push-up test. We're going to do a 1-minute pull-up test. We're going to do a 1-minute shin grab sit-up test. Now, I'm going to take those three tests, and the 3 days you meet with me, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, that's going to be after our very, very intensive warm-up or activation and prep. That's going to be our test for the day. Why? For some people, I can put those all on one day. Your average person, no. We're going to break it up just like you would for high school sports and things like that. Then after that, we're going to do what's called a level one hurricane. Level one hurricane might just be 6 sets of 40-yard sprints, and that's all with body weight. So we sprint, sprint, we rest. Then we're done and we cool down. A level two, we might add in some med ball work. So now we're going to do 20 med ball slams, 20 Russian twist, sprint down. All right, 30 seconds recovery times 3. That's one round. Then we're going to do med ball rotational twist times 10. Med ball jackknife times 10, sprint 50 yards, recover times 3. Then our last one, we might do med ball push up and then single leg jackknife times 20, sprint 60 yards, or if we're on a treadmill, 60 seconds, jog back, or walk and recovery, or hopping to the side of the treadmill rail times 3. All right. Now we're going to go to, we've progressed. Now we're on to month number 2. You've advanced pretty fast. We're going to go to a level 3 hurricane. So now we're going to have those same sprints. All right. It could be 20 yards, 40 yards, however you want to mix them up. All right. Depending on that client's workload. But now we're going to add in either dumbbells or barbells. So it might be barbell curl, 8 reps, overhead press, 8 reps. So we have a push and a pull. Alright? Then we're going to sprint. Alright? Times 3. Then we might do barbell bent over row for 8, which is our pull. Then we do our barbell overhead tricep press. Alright? For 8. And then we sprint times 3. Alright? And then our final one, we might do let's say we do hang clean times 5, all right, and then we might do a good morning times 5, all right, and then we sprint times 3, and we recover.
Nice.
All right. Now, we're not going to really advance people past that. Mm-hmm. And the lower body work, if you notice, you don't see much because we have the sprinting in, because the sprinting should be done at maximum effort.
Okay.
If that person is advanced enough, say they're a fighter or an obstacle course racer, things like that, even if they are, we probably are not going to add a lot of lower body load. But if we do, we would add in things like your, you know, your lunge or your sprawl if you're an MMA fighter or slash burpee.
Mm-hmm.
And then level 5, we do strongman circuit. And that could be anything from pushing a sled, pulling the sled with a rope, sledgehammer with a tire. We're not going to really do tire flips because people forget about form. And that's the same movement as a deadlift. And we all know how hard a deadlift really is to teach.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to do maximal effort things like that for the sake of injury. And then we also teach a lot of recovery mechanics using a sled. Reason with that is because with a sled, you can pretty much use a sled every day to some extent, let it be pushing, pulling, core work. And because of the phase and load of the body, you're really not going to be sore. It's going to suck while you're doing it, no matter what. And that's what I tell people. With a sled work, you want to get in shape, you find a hill or you find a sled. And no matter what, how in shape you are, it's going to suck.
Yeah. And that is a nice point that you can push it hard and not be too worried about being super sore the next day because of that concentric effort versus the eccentric effort. Yeah, so good point there. So I think everybody listening is going to definitely see the benefit of that style of training where we're combining high-intensity interval-type work with sprinting paired with your, you know, starting with body weight and then gradually adding different types of loading with the workout. So all those are awesome. Again, I'll post some links, at least writing some of those workouts up so people kind of have like level 1, 2, 3 all the way up to get an idea there. Awesome. And then the last thing I wanted you to touch on, and we kind of already touched on it a little bit, was really a lot of your training style deals with athletes. And I know you've worked with a lot of elite athletes, but you also work with your average Joe and Jane that are just trying to get in shape, run a race, whatever it might be. But that's a lot of your mentality is training everyone like an athlete. So I just wanted you to touch on that a little bit. Like what does training like an athlete mean to you, and how you incorporate that?
All right, so my little slogans and philosophies are educate, motivate, inspire. All right, if I can educate you on the movement patterns, the exercises, you know, the nutrition aspects and the consultations and the things that you need to become the best you possible, I'm doing my job. All right, if I can motivate you to live a healthier lifestyle, let it be running an obstacle course race, running a 5K, going out and playing more with your kids when you'd rather sit down, you know, I'm doing my job. And if I can inspire you, you know, to do something you've never done, like do a Spartan race, then I'm doing my job. And it's all for the better of overall society, no matter how you look at it. I say unleash your inner athlete because I believe that everybody is an athlete. You know, when we were all little, no matter what people say, we all ran, we jumped, we crawled, and we never second-guessed it. But now, today's society, we're so out of shape, it's ridiculous. And not to say that it's, you know, this person's fault or that person's fault. A lot of it is just how society is now. And now society is to the point where it's either balls-to-the-wall training or yoga. And there's nothing wrong with either one of them. But you have to have a common balance, you know, like people don't realize, like, I can take TRX and I can make it extremely hard for you. I can make it like a HIIT workout. I can take CrossFit and I can educate you on Olympic movements and things like that and the methodology so you have a better understanding of it before you just go off of what you saw in a video and being, oh, CrossFit gets people hurt. You know, same thing with Spartan race training. A lot of people come to me and they're like, oh, well, I'm a runner, so I can run a Spartan race or any type of obstacle. I'm sure you could, but how are you going to get the best out of what you're trying to do? You know, so that's what it really comes down to. Another organization that I'm very, very big on is OPEX by James Fitzgerald. I'm actually in their Total Course Coach program, and we go through lifestyle coaching, assessment, all of that type of stuff. James Fitzgerald was actually the very first CrossFit Games champion. But how he coaches his methodology now is, say you have that CrossFit athlete and they're in a group setting. Everybody's getting a customized workout even in a group setting, based off of their wants and needs. And I feel like that's what us as coaches, we need to get back to that more. Not just putting a workout on a board, let it be, you know, bodybuilder, let it be CrossFit, let it be SGX. I feel like we really need to start asking more questions for the client. Like, the facility that I do some of my coaching at now, called The Hive, we are a multi-dimensional training facility. You've got CrossFit coaches here. You've got sports performance coaches here. You've got general populations coaches here. We all work together to learn how to merge what we're doing together. Because at the end of the day, I feel a lot of people aren't asking enough questions. Now everybody's writing a workout down, and this is the workout. But I've got Jimmy, Jane, and DeAndre. They all came in at 5 o'clock for 5 o'clock's workout, but they all had a different life before they walked into the door. Jimmy is going through a divorce. Jane just found out she's got breast cancer. DeAndre is trying to get back into competitive basketball. How do we fit that, their workout, that they're all doing the same, but give each person that different intensity, that different feel, but also that one-on-one feel that they are getting exactly what they want and exactly what they need at the same time? We have to ask more questions. So for how I do things here, a lot of people might come in and they'll be like, oh man, I'm super sore from, you know, the last workout, so I'm not coming in today. No, you're coming in today. We're just going to turn your workout into a body weight or a loaded movement training with the Viper or the Steel Mace or the TRX mobility type session. That way I can still educate you, I can still motivate you, and I can still inspire you to become the better person that you were. I've taken some clients and taught them just how to do self-myofascial release with their own hands or a lacrosse ball or a foam roller, things like that, and use that as sessions, and they've been able to live better and move better. And I attest to that because I had an older client of mine. She was 68. She had a neck issue. After 1 month, she was able to stand up straight and lift her head up straight. She now, every Christmas, buys her family lacrosse balls.
There you go. Easy gift.
You know? People might look at it like, what does that do? But it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people need to understand, I feel, that movement is medicine, and you have to use it. And if Spartan Race is getting people to move more, I'm all for it. If CrossFit is getting people to move more, done properly, I'm all for it. If yoga is your niche, and it's getting you to move more, I'm all for it. Now, once you've found that balance, let's get into some other things. Let's see what else is really out there, because you and I both know that there's two sides to the fitness industry. There's the educational side that me and you are, you know, deep into, and then there's that side of, I don't want to say Instagram trainer, but there's that side of, you know, the just, let's put up half-naked pics and show my abs and show these squats that I did. But then I always ask those same people, like, hey, can you work with a person with diabetes or osteoporosis or one leg? And they're like, why would I want to? And my rebuttal is, why wouldn't you want to? You're a true health professional, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the biggest thing that SGX has given me is another tool to help give back to the community.
Awesome.
That's probably the biggest thing I love about the SGX community is you kind of got to want it. And as you see, everybody in there is very, very educated because they know SGX is just one part of the platform.
Mm-hmm.
But it's getting people out there. It's getting people moving. Now you see a lot of people converting from SGX to wanting to do American Ninja Warrior, things like that, things that they never would have thought of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's bringing families together. You see how many families run these races together now?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's amazing because it's something that anybody can do, you know? And that's what I love about it, and that's my movement and goal through fitness.
Awesome. And I thought you brought up a ton of great points there, and just to touch back, the idea of kind of balls to the wall, or I'm not really going to work out today, like getting away from those mentalities where there's always something, and there's a place for all-out workouts, and then there's a place for recovery workouts. And the whole SGX program is so broad, which is great because you implement, and obviously you have a ton of different backgrounds that you can draw from. So whether it's training for warrior style, whether it's CrossFit, whether it's whatever it might be, yoga, mobility, that's the idea of taking all of these different styles of training and getting people better. Whatever better means for them, that's always our goal. So that's awesome. Well, cool. So I know we're running out of time here, so I just wanted to go a couple rapid-fire questions for you to finish up. So what is your favorite obstacle?
My favorite obstacle would have to be, and people might think I'm crazy, but the barbed wire climb at the very end.
I mean,
who doesn't want to get a good tennis shot?
Yeah.
But the more you crawl, the closer you are to that finish line.
Yeah, very good point. I am one of those people that think you're crazy. That is my least favorite, and probably, you know, I'm taller. I don't have great hip mobility, so I'm struggling under there. So.
Yeah, mine's horrible.
Yeah,
My hip mobility's horrible.
Yeah.
There was one race down here where they did it in Miami, and there were two barbed wire circuits, and one was just all over rocks. Sick.
Pretty much, yeah. Awesome. All right, how about your least favorite?
What's that?
Your least favorite obstacle. Rope climb. All right, yeah, we touched on that already. Nice. All right. Do you have like a favorite resource, tool, website, piece of equipment, just kind of one thing that you just think everybody should have or look up or at least check out when it comes to training or recovery or nutrition, whatever it might be?
I would have to say, one, everybody should check out my website.
All right.
Fitness.com.
And we'll definitely put a link in there.
Awesome. And then I would say that number one tool, I would say, is that TRX.
All right.
So that would be that number one tool, would be that TRX. That's
okay.
What I would think everybody should have and everybody should use.
All right, awesome.
It's portable. It can go anywhere with you.
All right, cool. So let's see, last question. If you had a first-time racer, what's one piece of advice you would give them before their race?
Take your time.
Okay.
Take your time, and my biggest thing that I would say is you can finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and anybody can do these. And I know sometimes people see the race and see how intimidating it looks, but honestly, when you get out there, anybody can do these things to your level, for sure.
Right, so. Definitely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. Ton of great info. Just for everybody listening, I'm going to put all the links, anything we talked about, Coach Dom's info, so you can check out his website and videos and Instagram account. I'll have it all on there. Just go to www.spartanunderground.com/episode-3, and you'll be able to check all that stuff out. All right, thanks so much for joining us today, man. It was awesome.
All right, thank you.
All right. Well, Aru, we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
All right, bye. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for episode 5. I wanted to thank Coach Dominic Frazier for joining us today and giving his insight on how to maximize your training and really sharing his story to help others overcome some of the obstacles that they might be facing. Don't forget, any links mentioned or if you want to learn more about Coach Dom, you can check out the show notes at www.spartanunderground.com/episode-5. And also check out our site, spartanunderground.com. If you haven't signed up for our Step Up to Spartan program, it's a 4-part email series on how to help you train for your Spartan race. And if you need a little bit more help, we still have our 90-day training program, and we still have a few spots left. If you sign up, you do get a free pair of Spartan Underground SGX compression socks. So until next time, keep training hard.